This program is brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
Hello and welcome to Newsmakers. I'm your host, Lisa Pugh. Representative Gordon Hintz of Oshkosh was first elected in 2006 and has since served 8 terms in the Wisconsin State Assembly. He is one of only a handful of state Democrats who know what it's like to be in the majority party. He spent 4 years as minority leader, becoming known for some sharp criticism of colleagues across the aisle. He announced earlier this year he won't be seeking re-election, and we check in with him today on his proudest accomplishments, future plans, and thoughts on the future of Wisconsin. Thank you for joining us.
I'm happy to be here.
You know, listening to you over the years, I've heard you talk about how politics was always kind of a part of your life growing up, conversations at the kitchen table. Will it be hard for you to leave the legislature in just a few short months?
Yes. It's really about public service in my family. My parents were university professors. My mom served on the zoning board. My dad was on the city council. He taught public administration. And I've always viewed it as that. And it's an incredible opportunity to serve your community in the legislature and do your best to create opportunity for folks. But, I look forward to trying to find another role where I can make a difference and that uses my skill set. But I know this is a unique opportunity where you get an opportunity to use your voice to try to shape the debate, to try to push for accountability, and I've never tried to forget that during my time here. So I will miss it, but I'm ready.
Eight terms, that's a long time. You spent some time in the minority, then you're briefly in the majority, as we said, and then Governor Walker and the Tea Party candidates coming in 2010. When you announced your retirement, are we calling it a retirement?
No, because I'm only 48.
Okay.
I have to retire, so can I eventually retire someday?
So it's calling your exit. Okay. When you announced your exit from the legislature in March, you said in your statement, "It's been an amazing experience to serve my hometown in the assembly. It's also been a grind at times." What did you mean by that?
Well, I mean, that's part of it is I think if you're going to do this job, you should do it as well as possible, work as hard as possible, and do all components of the job. And certainly you don't get to choose the time that you serve, but you have to find value in the work that you do. I certainly came in more interested in driving the agenda for public policy to create opportunity to make the improvements in our state. Given the political alignment, a lot of it was focused on perhaps minimizing bad ideas, holding politicians accountable for bad ideas, and trying to...
Is that what you were expecting when you ran?
Absolutely. I've had sort of, different roles in the legislature, but I realized that I had a role to play and that those are part of things too. And some of it's about keeping ideas alive, hopefully for a future time. I leave knowing that some of the things that I wanted to accomplish weren't done, but I'm, proud of the work I was able to do, and I'm okay with it.
We have a clip from you. We went in the Wayback Time Machine here at Wisconsin Eye, and we pulled out a clip from 2009, shortly after you were first elected. And you're talking here about your perspective on governing from the majority party. So we're going to take a listen to what you had to say then.
I think there's a big difference in being in the majority and in the minority. I think in many ways, being in the minority for your first term was of some benefit. I mean, certainly there were frustrating days, but it allowed you to come in and sort of understand things. There's far more responsibility, and being in the majority, you're expected to govern. And of course, right now, there's a series of difficult choices to make, but that's what we're elected to do. I think we all wish that we were here at a time when we could provide greater tax relief and, improve funding for education. But we're being asked to lead now, and that, no one runs for office getting to decide when they want to serve. And you can't run from it or, practice the politics of pity. And so I'm enjoying that as well. I mean, there are definitely more stressful days. I think you understand in the legislature that you can't act alone. You need to work with people, and that means compromising a lot and doing whatever it takes to get sort of a majority of votes. But again, there's good days and bad days, but I find most people on both sides down here motivated for the right reasons.
How are the politics different in Madison today than they were back in 2009?
Well, they're definitely more toxic. A lot of it can be explained by gerrymandering. I mean, the reality is when I came into the legislature, you had districts that were court-drawn, where the majorities were different, you know, smaller, no matter who was in charge. We had divided government. What you see now, especially how polarized politics have become, you know, when you have a number of 65-70% Republican or Democratic districts, you have more of the extremes. And when you elect people via primaries, usually sometimes is the most extreme candidate that gets elected. And we're kind of seeing a legislature that's increasingly disaligned with where public opinion is in the state of Wisconsin. You know, and that's made it hard because democracy ultimately only works when you have accountability in a general election. I mean, I think about those first 4 years I had in the legislature, and you know, when we would debate policy and decision making, it was really you had to think about, well, where are my constituents at? You know, what's the accountability I'll have in trying to explain my vote heading into a November election? And that's really what shapes things. Well, now there's really no disincentive to go as far as possible because there's very little chance you'll lose your seat. In fact, if you're not extreme, you might lose your seat via primary. We've certainly seen that at the national level and in some instances at the state level.
So one of the other interesting things that you said in that clip is you said, I find that most people down here are motivated by the right reasons. You still believe that?
I think it gets more complicated. I think public service requires people that want to step up. I have had some people that probably came in, perhaps with an anti-government bent or were motivated to come in and think they were going to fix things, that have actually taken the time to learn and seen how complicated it is and change their minds. But I do think there are a lot of people now, you know, who come in with an anti-government mindset. And I'm sort of like, there's a role for government and we need to administer these core programs that keep the state afloat for a variety of reasons. Why are you serving if you don't even believe in the institution that you work in? And so I think the intent to serve is more what I was alluding to. I mean, people kind of come down here to serve the public. And I always try to say that's what we all have in common. You know, it's a complicated room. And even now there's more diversity of opinion, more differences. We all come from somewhere. The thing that we all have in common is we all have to go back to constituents. We all represent unique parts of the state. And, you know, we're all sort of on the same 2-year cycle. And if there's anything that holds it together, I try to remind people there's only 99 people that share. That's a pretty small club.
So that part stayed the same, but...
I mean, stay the same, but I mean, it's, you know, there's not as much to hang on. I think, you know, in 2009, I may have felt a little bit different, and I tried to understand when we were debating things that, you know, not to necessarily question the intent, you know, understand where the colleagues that you disagree with are coming from, you know, and don't question the sincerity and intent of that.
Do you question intent now, or are you more likely to?
I do when you're talking about things like overturning democracy or... you know, absolutely blind special interest giveaways or purely ideological moves that have no basis in good government to improve the lives of the state. And I think that speaks a lot to what's changed with our politics, but also some of the forces that are out there. You know, last thing I would say about what's changed is the decline of local media and media in general has changed since I started. I mean, the Oshkosh Northwestern had local editorial content 6 days a week, including covering state issues. The press room at the Capitol was much bigger. You know, in recent years, it's been hard to get press to cover some hearings on important issues.
Does that impact voter education?
Absolutely. I mean, people, you'd go campaign and you'd go to people and people had no idea that, you know, property taxpayers are paying $3 million for private schools in Oshkosh because there's no one covering it. And I think, you know, during the Walker years, I think he recognized that there wasn't any accountability. They could get away with things because no one was covering it. We got more national focus on some of these, you know, issues. And I think that's been part of the decline of the governance and the attacks on democracy that we've seen is, you know, people can follow national politics kind of through some of the circus, for better or worse, of national media, and maybe they can retain some impact locally depending on the community if you've got a good weekly or something. But I think that's declining. But state, I noticed,
like
fell apart.
Gotten, more cynical since this 2009?
Well, I'm just aware, you know, you get asked the question, what's changed? And you think about it. And I realized that when you would do Doors in those early years, I could not believe how dialed in people were on the issues. And it's become less so because it's been harder to follow. And there's also been fewer people talking about the same issues. People have become kind of stratified in ways that make it harder.
You've been, during your time, a very harsh critic of your colleagues across the aisle, and particularly Speaker Robin Voss, a Republican Assembly Speaker. You've accused him of spearheading toxic politics, particularly during that lame duck session before Governor Evers took office, when the legislature voted to take away some powers of the governor. Do you worry about long-term consequences of those actions, or was that just a smart political move on the part of Speaker Voss?
Oh, I mean, if you're interested in pure power, which I think he was, damn the state, damn the reputation of the assembly. I mean, no one's done more damage to the institution of the assembly than the speaker in his time. But I mean, he did so willingly. It was all about power, undermining, you know, Governor Evers, undermining the voters of the state who chose Governor Evers with those powers. I kind of view that as the beginning of the attacks on democracy, I mean, outside of gerrymandering and then leading up to the January 6th things. You know, it was nothing personal, although it felt personal at times. I never wanted to be minority leader. My colleagues came to me and said, we need someone that's going to hold the speaker accountable. And while I couldn't stop what they were going to do, I was going to make sure, you know, that I did everything possible to hold them accountable and call it what it was. And so if I breathed a little fire and pushed back a little bit, it was to make sure that everybody knew how serious it was. And I feel very strongly about the institution. I think there should be rules. There should be parameters about what happens in a democracy. And these guys have lost their way and run roughshod over that. And it's disappointing. And I think it's going to, you know, impact us going forward. Our state has certainly lost its reputation.
As you know, Speaker Voss narrowly retained his seat in a tougher than expected primary to a candidate endorsed by former President Trump. And now that candidate is talking about a potential write-in campaign. What are your thoughts on Speaker Voss now and on that race in particular? Do you have an opinion?
Only as an observer that you know, you reap what you sow. I mean, he's created this beast. When you draw the districts that put in a permanent majority that can't be impacted, you tend to elect people to the legislature like the ones they're getting, that are increasingly hostile to government, that are willing to believe the big lies, that are merely puppets for Donald Trump.
Speaker Voss takes full blame for that. He doesn't have to follow politics in the state.
Well, I mean, he has to decide if he wants to, you know, lie and become part of a disingenuous Donald Trump big lie to stay in power, or if he wants to actually have some self-respect and adhere to the laws and the rules. He's tried to have it both ways. I mean, he wasted taxpayer money putting an absolute pathetic joke out there to try to investigate fraud that was never found. And then it came back.
He's fired Michael Gabelman. Only because, does he get credit for that?
No, because he only fired him because he endorsed his opponent. He didn't fire him for being an embarrassment. He didn't fire him for wasting $7 million or $1 million on a absurd exercise that found absolutely nothing. So, you know, I think it's a product of, if you're going to go down that rabbit hole to stay in power, you're going to have to deal with the consequences. And the fact that he almost lost his seat, I think, is telling about how far things have changed, and he's a part of creating that.
Your party has also moved nationally and in Wisconsin further left, and some people criticize the Democratic Party as well. You've represented a more moderate part of the state in the city of Oshkosh. Has that been challenging to lead as you've watched your party move further left?
I've been asking myself this since now that I'm leaving office. You know, I don't feel like there's that many issues that I've dramatically changed on in terms of, I mean, there's things I've changed my opinion on, and I think that's a good thing. But a lot of it is how you communicate and talk about things. I mean, I think there are constituencies that are better organized. There are issues that move faster or take, you know, that get out there. But in a lot of the changes that have happened have been emerging for a variety of reasons. I mean, I don't view climate change as something that is left-wing. I view it as something that's urgent and before us, and it's grown because more people understand it.
So it's not a bad thing that your party is seen as moving further to the left.
I mean, there are some policies maybe, I disagree with. And I notice what people are saying when they say it's moved to the left. But when you're talking about, Democrats have always stood, for opportunity and for civil rights. So if we're talking about, issues of reproductive health, the issue of LGBTQ rights, if you're talking about racial justice, I mean, those are issues of opportunity. And if they're receiving more attention now, I don't think it's that we've moved to the left. I just think that we're really trying to emphasize, broaden, and deliver for people on values that we've always agreed with. When it comes to fiscal policy and other things, I think, I guess that really depends on things. And, Democrats are still a big tent. We represent different parts of the state. Sure, there's always a balancing act between what you can do on the east side of Madison and what you can get away with on the east side of Oshkosh. But I think it depends on what the lens you use is for what's left and what's right. I think, the year I got elected, we banned in our Constitution gay marriage and civil unions. Well, we've seen that issue change dramatically in terms of public opinion. You look at the issue of marijuana has changed. So, I mean, the public has changed on a lot of these issues. So, and those happen to be issues that Democrats are advocating for. I don't think that they've moved to the left.
They're not liberal issues.
I think they are reflective of where the public is. And I'd say the same with a number of other issues.
One issue that you've been really vocal about during your time in office is the contract with Foxconn negotiated by former Governor Walker. Just a few weeks ago, you commemorated in a statement the five-year anniversary of that contract, and we have your comments up here on the screen. Close to $1 billion has been spent on this project in the last 5 years. No one has any idea what, if anything, is being produced. The past 5 years has been an endless series of excuses, broken commitments, and proposed products that have never actually happened. Besides significant public funding for overbuilt infrastructure that is not being used, the project diverted the focus of state leaders away from realistic and effective efforts to grow Wisconsin's economy. As you know, Governor Evers renegotiated that contract. Isn't it time to move on? Is Foxconn old news?
It is, but I think it's something that, I mean, if you go back and look at the decisions that were made, why they were made, and what we were told, the people who made those decisions should be held accountable.
And they haven't been?
Well, I think it should be a reminder, given that many of them are still in office, and it is a stark contrast in economic policy between, I think, the current administration, who thankfully have intervened to the best, possible. I mean, if this was going to be a 20-year plan that dramatically transformed Wisconsin's entire economy, and the same people that were proponents of it are making the case that they need to be in charge again, I think it's important to remind people.
You're going to keep that up, even out of office?
It violated every sense of, everything that it really bothered me as a public servant. I always say that accountability is a big part of things. And if you're going to take taxpayer money, both as a company and as leaders that are giving it, you need to be transparent, you need to be accountable. And in this case, there were neither. And there are a number of us, I wish that it all worked out, and I'm still hopeful that something will happen. But we said at the time, this doesn't make sense, this is a bad deal, and you can't buy economic development. And sadly, we were right. And I think that, there may be future attempts down the road to pull the state back in to try to pump up a project that is, overbuilt and underdeveloped.
You have said that among your proudest accomplishments is your work on women's health issues, and you were an advocate for the Compassionate Care for Rape Victims Act, an advocate for full funding for the Well Woman program. Why has women's health been a key issue for you during your tenure?
As someone who, grew up in a household with a mom who was very active in women's rights and Planned Parenthood and reproductive health, I wanted to come into the legislature being open-minded, willing to compromise. But on core value issues like women's health, like civil rights, there's not a lot of room to sort of compromise. When I was elected, that was such an important issue. It was one of the big three issues that we had hospitals in the state that would not give rape victims, the access or information about emergency contraception to try to not make the, indignity and suffering of rape any worse by then getting pregnant from it. That was very important. And I kept the issue out there, and to get that done right away in a bipartisan fashion, I thought, was really important. And I just, you know, every opportunity to try to listen to, you know, health officials on the ground and to do everything possible. And, of course, we were making progress, and that's what's made the last year so difficult, that you realize when you get to the top of the hill, you're not done. Probably never got to the top of the hill to begin with, but you know, I just feel like the issue gets frustrating. You realize that it's been fought about for decades, you know, and needs, you know, we need to continue to stand up and be advocates and listen to women and listen to medical professionals.
Speaking of listening to women, abortion expected to be a key election issue this November following the Supreme Court decision to reverse Roe v. Wade. Republicans I've talked to who say that they don't expect abortion to be a deciding factor in Wisconsin in who someone votes for, even if it's an issue they feel is important. Do you think abortion will be a deciding factor in determining the outcome of elections in November?
I think it'll be a motivating factor. I hate when I get asked questions about, like, well, do you think abortion is going to be a big political issue, because it's a public health issue. It's a human right issue. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think you've seen the polling. I think you saw what happened in Kansas, and the fact that you've now taken away rights that have been there for 50 years for women in this country, you know, can't help. But I mean, I think there are a lot of people that are probably quiet, maybe that aren't saying a whole lot, but when they get into the voting booth, are going to take that into account. When you have a gubernatorial candidate who said they support the 1849, 170, whatever, you know, year ban on all, any and all abortions in the state, you know, when medical providers are saying they can't care for pregnant women in the best way possible, how can it not be an issue? You know, that being
strong
said,
it's enough issue to make somebody check a box for a party.
They have to ask themselves what kind of world they want to live in and what kind of state they want to live in. I understand it's a political issue, but it's a political issue because it's a human issue, because it's an individual rights issue, and it's a health care issue.
Speaking of the governor's race, in some of your tweets, you are a regular person on Twitter. You've called the Republican candidate for governor, Tim Michaels, an enemy of democracy. And there's never been a less courageous and sad front gubernatorial candidate. Do you believe Tim Michaels is a dangerous candidate for Wisconsin?
I don't like using the word, you know, dangerous. I just think he's incredibly unprepared. For someone that has sought public office, you know, 18 years ago, to be running again and demonstrate no progress, no curiosity or interest in understanding state governance or how it even works. I have no problem having someone from the private sector want to get up and serve in public service, but you need to make the effort to try to learn about the difference between the private sector and state government and understand the decisions that you're going to be making. And even in the 4 or 5 months he's been running, there's been absolutely zero improvement. And some of the policies are so extreme and so out of line at a time when Wisconsin is desperate to get people to move here. You know, between the U.S. Supreme Court and Tim Michaels' platform, it's sort of a race to the, you know, 19th century or something. It's so I don't like the word dangerous. It's just, you know, here's a guy who's just completely ill-prepared and seems to demonstrate no curiosity in learning how to do the job.
Continuing talking about the election, that U.S. Senate race, there were some polls last week that showed Mandela Barnes, Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, with a lead over U.S. Senator Ron Johnson. Does that give you confidence, or do you think it's going to really be a very tight race and you don't a toss-up?
I'd rather have it be the way it was than the opposite. You know, I'm not surprised. I mean, not because just the anti-Ron Johnson, but as someone who's a friend and worked with Mandel in the assembly, he's a really talented guy, you know, I think who has an experience that's shared with a lot of Wisconsinites in terms of what he's dealt with as an individual and, you know, the success that he's had. I don't get real, you know, excited about August polls. I think it's going to be an incredibly close race. It's going to be an incredibly negative race. But he's charismatic. He speaks to the Democratic values of opportunity, fairness, equality, accountability. He's stepping up big when we need him to. And I think he's generating enthusiasm that Democrats need heading into a, you know, midterm with the optics. And Ron Johnson
is... What's your advice for your friend, Mandela Barnes?
To keep doing what he's doing. I mean, Mandela knows who he is, you know. I mean, when you sit with him, you see him give a prayer before every single meal because he knows that he's fortunate. And it's something that I've always noticed about him, no matter where he is. And so it's just to keep your, you know, in a campaign, you don't get too high, too low. You got to remind yourself, you have good days where you feel like you're winning and days you feel like you're losing. So keep your head about you, you know, take care of yourself. But, you know, I think he's rising to the occasion. And I think it couldn't have been a better end to the primary to have the support from the other candidates and the endorsement. And, you know, I think he's on the big stage now, but he's delivering.
Back to you a little bit. What are you most proud of during your time in the legislature?
Yeah, when you're on your farewell tour, you start get asked about these things, and oh, you know, my legacy, and it never looks like how you want it to, right? I mean, I was someone who had worked in government at the federal, state, and local level, and as prepared as you think you are for being an observer or someone more familiar with government and politics, it's always different. And you know, I guess my biggest things is that I never lost my commitment to Oshkosh. It was always, at, you know, first and foremost, you know, my biggest focus. Sometimes it was hard when I became leader, which was a new challenge because I didn't ever want to let up trying to do everything possible to stay in touch with the priorities of the community and deliver. You know, there's a number of individual policies, a number of building projects, certainly, that I was able to get done. But I also, when you announce you're going to run for office, I think a lot of your friends, especially those that hate politics, are worried that you're going to be a robot or something. And I don't want to say that it was at the forefront, but, you know, I believe in authenticity, and I've tried to maintain that, meaning I wanted to do this my way, and maybe that's not the most comfortable for everybody. But I felt like I was able to do this in a way that I was true to who I was, and I think the voters recognize that as well. But it's been a great relationship with my community where when I ran, I said I wanted to make sure that, you know, the community had a partner at the state level, you know, that we were doing everything possible that we could to improve the lives of the people that live in Oshkosh. And of course, those, you know, lives and issues and challenges exist statewide as well. But So, those may be different kinds of things. You know, I could sit here and beat my chest and talk about how if you've got a carbon monoxide detector, that was me. And there's certainly things that we've done. You know, I think back to things like the smoking ban. I mean, most of my life, you could smoke anywhere. You smoke at McDonald's, smoke on airplanes. And I thought Wisconsin's going to be, before I got in the legislature, we're going to be the last state to ever pass a smoking ban. And I think we were like the 27th, 28th state, you know, and it was a pretty big deal. And when you look
like
at the
a long time ago, yeah. But yeah.
And you want to talk about measurable public health impacts. That was a big deal. And this year we made it, we raised the age to 21 years old to be able to buy tobacco products. And that kind of went under the radar. But those are things that were bipartisan that maybe didn't get the attention they deserve, but they're measurable things that, you know, had a positive impact that you got to be a part of.
When, as you step back from public office and you look at Wisconsin's future, do you see more concerns or do you see more opportunities for the state?
I say to a lot of colleagues, especially new ones, especially when I became leader, because people come in so idealistic and probably because the job is so different, that, you know, you don't want them to become cynical. You try to talk about, you know, you need to find value in the work that you do. And sometimes it's about keeping ideas alive and connecting with people out there so they also do that. I mean, I really think cynicism is a bad thing. You need to try to keep hope. You got to keep the faith. And so on the opportunity front, clearly there's a lot of great things about Wisconsin, and I could go half full or half empty. I think the attacks on our institutions, the willingness of elected officials to choose power over democracy, is a major threat nationally and at the state level, and we need more voices out there that recognize that, you know, that there are rules. We're way out of line with where the public is, but we've got an aging population, our demographics. We don't have enough people. I think the next few years are going to be really challenging, especially for, you know, corrections officers, teachers, psychiatric care technicians at Winnebago and Oshkosh. We don't have enough people, and there are shortages for jobs that need to be done. And we're not, I don't feel like enough urgency is out there, because when we're there, you can't do anything about it.
We have to look forward.
We do. We have to plan for it. We're not going to be able to fill them. There aren't enough people. So I think we need to start looking at what are the things we can do? How are we going to be able to manage with fewer people? You know, I think issues like immigration are going to become more accepted and realistic simply because we're going to need people. People need to get on board with that. But so I'd say, you know, biggest threat is attacks on democracy, willingness to choose power and politics over the public good. The optimism is that, you know, there's a lot of leaders, especially not in government, who I think are trying to do a lot of things in our communities throughout the state. I think there's more, I think there are more good things perhaps happening at the local government level that doesn't seem to be as toxic as the state and federal politics that I think give me hope alive. And the last thing I'll say is I still have, it's always crazy when some mom introduces me to their 14-year-old and says, oh, my son or my daughter's so interested in politics. And I was like, what? Like today? Like right now?
Do you encourage them?
I do, but I'm encouraged because they're excited about it for the right reasons. They want to get involved to make a difference. And I'm just thinking about the difference between, I think, how functional I thought it was or, you know, versus what it is today. I mean, I just feel like, oh, this is so, I mean, I understand why people check out. But there are still young people that are getting involved because they recognize that politics is how you make a difference. And I'm excited about that because we need it. And, you know, my new colleagues, we had 10 new freshmen in the Democratic caucus. And they really, you know, I could see that at the end of 16 years, as much as you try, that's what I meant by the grind. It's really hard because it wears you down. As much as you try to fend it off,
new people.
We do need new people, and they bring that juice. And you know, but you know, at the same time, you got to talk to them so they don't lose that. You got to keep it alive.
Sure. Well, as we round out our conversation, when you announced your non-retirement back in March, you said you weren't ready to tell us your future plans. But we're interested in breaking news here on Wisconsin Ice. So, what is next for Representative Gordon Hintz?
You're going to have to stay tuned. It's been a great time because I've been able to, you know, pause, take a break, spend a little more time with my kids. But, you know, I'm still on the WEDC board. I still am doing things for my constituents. I'm transitioning things that I've worked on. But I've been looking at a number of opportunities, talked to a number of private sector, public sector, nonprofit.
And sticking around Oshkosh?
You know, I would like to, and I think there's more flexibility with some remote options, but I'm not ruling anything out, but, you know, I'm taking the luxury of the time to try to find a way to use the skills that I've developed here to make a difference.
Future run for office?
I'm not going to think about it right now. You know, it's so hard because you're different, you know, than you were when you started. I have a 3- and 5-year-old now that has changed my priorities. You always ask yourself what your original ambition was. You know, I'm still motivated to make a difference. You know, I want to believe in what I'm doing. You know, I think I'm a good strategic thinker. I think I'm a good communicator and advocate and leader. And I'd like to find what's the best role for me to be able to do that at the community organizational level. And, you know, that's what I'm going to do next. And, you know, I wouldn't rule it out. Again, I'm going to miss.
Service.
Yeah, I'm going to miss it. But I guess I've never been, you know, Barack Obama in kindergarten knew that he wanted to be president. You know, that was never me. You know, in 2004, when I first ran, it was, you know, why not me? We need somebody there that's going to, you know, advocate for our community. And so it was more of a calling of the moment. And if those happen again, you know, great. But it's been a real sacrifice, you know, for my family, for my wife, you know, and having two kids. Because I think if you're going to do the job, it has to be the priority. I always say if you don't want to go to an Eagle Scout ceremony during a Packer game on a Sunday, then don't be in office. You know, if you don't want to have a 2-hour conversation at the grocery store on Saturday, you know, don't run for office because that's part of the job, right? People, you're there to talk to people, to listen, to hear, to understand. And I appreciate that part of it, but it is, you know, it's harder when your priorities conflict because my family needs me and, not about me, right? And I think it never is. It's either about your constituents or, in this case, you know, time for me to step back from my family.
Well, we'll stay tuned and hear more great things from Representative Hintz. Thank you for joining us today.
You bet. Thanks.
Thank you to the viewers of Newsmakers. Be sure to tune in again as we sit down with the decision makers and highlight the issues that make a difference for all of us.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
This program is a production of Wisconsin Eye, an independent, nonpartisan, nonprofit media network with a mission to inform, educate, and engage the citizens of Wisconsin. Wisconsin Eye is the nation's first and only independently funded state civic broadcast network, providing gavel-to-gavel access to government proceedings and events at the state capitol.